Hello everyone, you're listening to J Movie Talk, episode 144, as I'll be talking Mad Max 1979.
Johnny the boy has done it again. This time it's a scrubber. He's never gonna learn.
But we are going to teach him, Baba. You are going back for him.
No way. Not me, not for him.
But it's not for him. It's for me, Baba.
Wasting your time, the Skag don't reach! He's nothing like a Knife Rider!
Hey, what's going on, everybody? I am back for the new year 2020. Back on the podcast, back leading the podcast. Actually, it's been a little bit over a month. Happy New Year to everyone, by the way. Hope the new year is doing you guys well. Like I was about to say, it's been a little over a month since I've actually led a podcast, and a little over a month since I actually did a movie talk podcast, just about, because even though my last episode, Black Christmas 1974, came out on December 20th, I actually recorded it a little earlier than that and everything. So it's kind of interesting to get back into the swing of things. So bear with me if I kind of botch up a few things as I go through this movie talking about Mad Max, the first Mad Max, which came out in 1979, directed by George Miller, starring, of course, Mel Gibson. But before I actually get into talking about the movie, I do want to talk about the movie's director, George Miller. This was his very first film. Before this, of course, he directed a couple of shorts and everything like this, but this was his very first film. And ironically enough, looking through his filmography, director credits, I should say, I've actually seen all of his films except for a movie that came out in 1992 called Lorenzo's Oil. I haven't seen that one, but it's crazy. I've seen all of the Mad Max films, including the newest one, Fury Road. I also saw The Witches of Eastwick, which is an interesting movie in itself. Twilight Zone, the movie, even though we don't talk about Twilight Zone, the movie, for various reasons. Well, one particular reason, but various reasons. It's a movie that never comes up in conversation anymore. You rarely hear anyone talk about Twilight Zone, the movie, even though a couple of podcasts have reviewed it here recently. Talking about you guys, Ryan and Martin, Blood and Black Rum podcast. I mean, you guys reviewed the Twilight Zone, the movie, when you was doing your anthology series for October and everything, which was a good series. So definitely check those guys out. You know, I always give them a shout out. They've done a few takeovers for me on my podcast and everything. So definitely check them out. And I haven't listened to the newest episode yet. And by the way, I mean, I said on here, congratulations, Ryan, on having twins. If you're listening to this episode and everything, so congratulations on that. But yeah, George Miller, like I said, I've seen all his films. I saw Babe 2, Pig in the City. I actually saw Happy Feet and Happy Feet 2, what not, if you believe that. But yeah, George Miller, he's always been somewhat of an interesting director, from the standpoint that he kind of helped usher in this kind of new exploitation car craze that happened in the late 70s and throughout the 80s, you know, and also helped bring attention to Australia as far as films. And Mad Max was one of those movies that kind of helped with that. But what's crazy about this movie is that even though it is the first film of the series, this was actually the last of the original trilogy that I saw. I remember as a kid growing up, I always saw The Road Warrior and Beyond Thunderdome. Those were always on TV mostly for me. And it wasn't, I want to say probably like the mid-90s, late 90s, I think is the first time I actually saw Mad Max all the way through. And because it's completely different from the two sequels. The two sequels, you know, Max is in the wasteland and everything. He's this already hardened and grizzled type character and everything. But this movie, you know, is like right before that. Before everything basically went to hell and you got dudes out there freaking leather chaps, you know, telling people just to walk away from the oil and everything like that. But this movie, you get to see, you know, a more reserved and everything type lifestyle that Max leads or whatnot. But in regards to George Miller, like I said, I like his directing style, especially with these movies. In his first movie, it feels very gritty and everything. And from some trivia that I read, the reason why it feels a lot gritty, because it kind of was very gritty. Guerrilla filmmaking or whatnot. They was basically like, hey, we're going to film scenes here and we got to hurry up and do this and get the hell out of here before we get arrested, you know, type thing. So it gives like that almost documentary feel to the film, which I like with this movie. So of course, before getting into it, just want to give the cast overview. Of course, we have Mel Gibson in his star making role, if you will, as Max. We have Joanne Samuels as Jesse, or Jess, his wife. Hugh Keyes Byrne or whatever. Well, there I am already, but it's first episode of 2020. I'm already butchering names, right? So there you go. As the toe cutter, Steve Bisley as Jim Goose, Tim Burns as Johnny the Boy, Roger Ward as Fifi, and that's pretty much your main cast of characters here. So the movie has probably one of, if not the best, opening car chase scene that you will probably ever see in a movie. It's basically where this character known as the Knight Rider has escaped from lockup, and he's picked up his girlfriend, I guess, or maybe she came to visit him and she helped him break out. It's never fully explained, but you know, he broke out of lockup and he's stolen a police cruiser and he's flying down the road like a madman. And it's this high speed chase, and you got these two cops, they're like sitting on the side of the road. One sitting inside the car, the other one, he has his rifle. He's not shooting anything. He's just using the scope just to kind of look around in there. He see a couple over in a field somewhere having sex and everything. He's just watching that. And then they hear on the radio blotter that, you know, the Knight Rider has escaped. And then you get this whole chase, you know, and this car that these two cops are in just gets beat up. They crash the thing at least three times or whatnot. The first time they get run off the road because the Knight Rider just a little quicker than they are, and he runs them off the road. And then they get back into it, and then they get into another accident where they run into a doggone like a family wagon that's crossing the street, and basically take that car out and, you know, just destroys the front end of it. And then the second, the last one is when they crash through a doggone family camper that's like broke down in the middle of the road, just smashed through that. It's like one of the funniest but craziest things you see, just how beat up this car getting. And the dude that's in the passenger seat, he gets his throat slit, and throughout the rest of the movie, he's talking with a voice box because he cut his vocal cords or whatnot. But this car chase, it kind of sets up for what you're in store for, but also at the same time, it doesn't, because after this car chase, you don't really get a lot of this type of stuff until toward the end of the movie or whatnot. But I know that this movie, like I say, it grabs you. I should say the opening car chase of this movie, it grabs you. Plus it kind of gives you a sense of who Max is, even though he tries to lead a nice life, which I'll talk about that later. But I feel like this gives a sense of who he is, and also what we will see of the character in the sequels, which I'll talk about that as I review the sequels of the movie. But yeah, so the Knight Rider, you know, he's, you know, speaking like a, you know, talking like a maniac and everything about, I'm the Knight Rider, I'm the fuel injected suicide machine, you know, he is the rocker, he's the roller, he's the Ayatollah, you know, or whatnot. He's the mighty hand of vengeance and everything like that. And Max ends up getting into the chase. Also, we're introduced to Goose, who's his best friend, who's Max's best friend. And Goose is a motorcycle cop, and he gets in on the chase, but he gets taken out relatively early when, you know, the whole crash thing happens on the freeway, on the highway, I should say, where he kind of crashes his motorcycle and slides up to the truck where the family who had the camper on it, and it is like, what is going on? He's like, I don't know, I just got here myself and everything, which is kind of funny. But yeah, so after all the other cops kind of get taken out, it's Max, he's the last one left, and he ends up chasing down the Knight Rider, and he basically takes him out by, you know, forcing him to crash the car, and it blows up and it kills him and his girl and everything. And that's kind of, well, that's basically how the movie opens right there and everything. Like I say, but it's probably one of the best car chases that you get. And movies like this is kind of the reason why I have such a affection for movie car chases, because you have real cars actually doing this. And I know for a long period of time in recent years, they got away from, you know, real car chases, which always kind of bugged me. And you didn't have music that played over, you heard the cars, those engines and everything. That's what made car chases so great. That's the reason why a while back on the podcast, I want to say when I was still on SoundCloud, actually, I did a top 10 favorite car chase episode where I talked about my favorite car chase, and this car chase was one of my top 10, actually, because I just enjoy it that much, because it's a thrilling, it's like 9 minutes long, well, almost 10 minutes, but it's over 9 minutes long. And it just, you get so much from those 9 minutes. It just brings you in. And like I say, George Miller's style, it also helps with making it, you know, a thrilling car chase. Also, there's some comedic elements to it, and you get all of that wrapped up in that first 10 minutes of the movie, essentially. So after the whole car chase thing, we introduced to the Nomad Gang. They never have an official name, they're just known as a Nomad Gang, and it's led by the Toe Cutter. And they show up at this kind of like this little small town where there's a train station. And as the gang is kind of going rambunctious in the town, the Toe Cutter, Bubba, and Johnny the Boy, and a few others, they find the train master or whatnot, and they talk to him like, hey, no, we're waiting on a friend of ours that came in on the train. And the dude, not realizing, he says, well, only thing that came in was a few boxes and a coffin. And Bubba's like, our friend. Which the guy's like, oh, crap, I screwed up. They're going to kill me. But they end up walking him to this little, it's a small coffin. So it's like, and the guy, once again, he's like, well, they didn't leave too much of him, did they? And they look at him like, you son, that's like, that's strike two. Whatnot, because they give this dirty look and everything. And these guys are like one of the weirdest gangs you probably ever see. But it was crazy enough, they're not the weirdest, you know, gangs or villains that we'll see throughout this series, because it gets a lot crazier once we get to the Wasteland stuff. But like I say, that's for future episodes. But I would say this gang, they felt very much like a Clockwork Orange, like Alex Delarge and his droids or whatnot. And just for how playful they are, but they mix it with violence, and there's a few similarities between certain gang members and the gang in A Clockwork Orange. And I want to say that George Miller, he drew influence from that, because of just how certain things that they do, especially like the playfulness that they have right before they're about to beat somebody up or kill somebody, and how the Toe Cutter is very serious at moments, but then very playful all at the same time. And he's even very comforting in a way, with even when he's talking to the guy after when he tells him, hey, take off your hat when you address the Knight Rider, and remember him when you look at the, when you look up at the sky. And when they tell him, when the Toe Cutter tells Johnny to take him away, Johnny's about to take him away and go kill him, but he's like, he holds his hand out. He's like, don't kill him, just take him away. Or whatnot. He didn't do a strike three. I think if he would have said something else, you know, was kind of sarcastic, like in regards to the Knight Rider, then maybe he would be like, yeah, you can kill him, but he didn't. So there's, you did two strikes, but you get a free pass here. But they eventually end up harassing some people that's in the town, and this guy and this girl that's off in the car that's like around the corner, wasn't that? They see everything that's going down, and then when they realize, like, oh shit, they feel kill these other dude, you know, this other guy or whatnot. They take off down the road, and then for some reason they decide to go chase them down, and we don't actually see what they do, but we kind of see the aftermath of it, where the car is completely destroyed. The guy is running off in a field with his shirt on, with no pants on, and the girl is completely naked. And now, interestingly enough, watching this movie, when it comes to this scene, I was under the impression that, yeah, they raped her, because, yeah, you think about that. But then it got me to think, I'm like, well, you see him running with no pants on. It's like, well, last time we saw him, he had on his pants. I'm like, is it possible they raped him too? And it wouldn't put me past this game, especially with the way they act, like they just didn't care. So if they did, it wouldn't be surprising if they did, because of the characteristics that they have and the things that they do. They just, but like I said, I never really paid attention to that until I watched it this time, you know, taking notes for this episode and whatnot. And it's like, well, maybe did they do that to him too? And it's like, oh my God. But at the same time, I mean, it's still just a terrible thing. But Max and Goose, they come along and they find Johnny the boy still there, because he's high out of his mind or whatnot, and they take him in and everything like that. And this is basically where the whole rift between the cops and this nomad gang comes into play, because not only the gang is already pissed at Max in particular, because they know he's the one that killed the Knight Rider, who was basically the number two of the gang, and everything like that. And then when Johnny gets arrested, who is looked at as the next in line, as the number two, as the new Knight Rider or whatnot, and everything that happens with him, this is where the gang really starts to kind of show their sadistic side and start, you know, doing different things like this. But like I said, this gang, they're very interesting. And of course, the whole stuff that happens with Johnny and Goose, because Goose, he gets very animated, especially the fact that Johnny the boy is allowed to go free, even though you got these two cops who are the ones who come along the scene. They see what is left of this girl in this car. He's there at the scene, but because there isn't enough evidence to prove that he actually did anything, so he's allowed to go free. And Goose, of course, takes personal offense to this and everything. He's like, I'm gonna see you on the road, you know, everything like that. Speaking of Johnny the boy, Tim Burns' character, I never understood why they put so much emphasis on his character. I've never liked that character. I felt like he's annoying. He's like a punk, really. He's very annoying. I felt like Bubba was the true, you know, number two, and probably the most level-headed of the entire gang. He didn't seem like the rest of the gang, per se. There was always something a little different about him. Even Toe Cutter, he fit in more with the gang. The Knight Rider, when you saw him, they fit in together. But Bubba Zanetti, it was his name, he always felt more like he could have been the true leader of the gang. And I guess that's why there was this whole rift somewhat between him and Johnny, because for some reason the Toe Cutter saw great potential in Johnny, and Bubba's like, he's not worth it, he's not even the Knight Rider or whatnot. And it was always that rift. But as far as Johnny the boy, he got a lot of, I want to say, a lot of attention put on him in this movie, and that wasn't really warranted, in my opinion. That character it just was. And I feel like, too, going back to the whole Clockwork Orange thing, like, he's supposed to be like the Alex of the group or whatnot, you know, because I'm sick, you know, I have a disease. And he wanted to hide behind that he had a sickness, you know, whatnot. No, he was just crazy. And he was a druggie and everything like that. And he used the fact that he used the law, the system, in a way to be able to juke the system into allowing him to get away with anything that he wanted until, of course, Max, you know, gets him in the end or whatnot. But I never really liked the character of Johnny the Boy. I kind of really detested the character. And the fact that he doesn't get the same death treatment as the rest. I mean, yeah, what Max does at the end with him, which I talk about, but I felt like he himself warranted more of a grizzled death than what he got, and everything. But at the same time, the actor Tim Burns, he did a great job in the role, because you're supposed to detest the character, so he did his job, I would say that. So one thing that I noticed about this movie too is that even though Max is the title character, but there's a good chunk of the movie that doesn't even focus on Max. We get a lot about Goose, and we should have known that something was going to lead up to what ends up happening with Goose, because there's a lot of attention put on him. The fact that we spend quite a bit of time with him solo, he, you know, even though he's very distraught about everything that's going down and everything with the gangs and stuff like that, he goes to this club or whatnot, and it's like a funky type club with this chick, she's singing the song, and it's like Goosey's all enamored with this singer or whatnot. And then we get where, you know, he's taking her home, and, you know, he has sex with her, and he leaves her and everything. He goes out and everything like that. And we just spend a lot of time with Goose by himself. And like I said, you don't really realize, like, hey, they're setting something up here, that something bad going to end up happening to Goose, which it does. The gang ends up, you know, trapping Goose in his truck or whatnot, and basically Goose gets roasted, and it's a grisly type scene or whatnot. And even though you never really fully see what happens to Goose, but you know he's burned real bad. And when Max shows up at the hospital and sees him, the look on Mel Gibson's face, I think that's one of the things about Mel Gibson that kind of gets overlooked, is that he was/is still a good actor or whatnot. But even back then, one of the things I think that made him what he was at the time, because at one point in time, people tend to forget, Mel Gibson was, like, if not the best actor in the world, I mean, the most popular actor in the world. I mean, you could say that he was the Tom Cruise of his era, if you will. You could kind of say that as far as popularity goes, like, everyone in the world, you know, who the heck is this guy? He's, you know, he's this good, and we just like him. But he was good at selling scenes with his face. And that's one of the scenes where he's very good at selling, you know, what he's seeing with his face in that particular scene. And even when he leaves, the emotion that he's going through, that his best friend has been taken out and everything, and he just doesn't know how to deal with it. And after what happens there, he decides, like, I'm quitting the force. No, I'm done. I can't do this anymore. So he goes to see Captain Fifi, who, first of all, here's this grown man named Fifi, and it's spelled F-I-F-I, right? Even though it's McAfee or whatnot, but they call him Fifi for some reason. And he always has on this doggone scarf or whatnot. Yes, before Chris Jericho, there was someone with a scarf and walk around with no shirt on. And it always kind of made me wonder, was this part of the whole BDSM, you know, type of thing? Because he was in leather and leather pants and everything, walking around with no shirt, big mustache, and a scarf and gold chain and everything, too. It's like, what the hell is going on with this guy? Even as a kid, I always kind of thought of something very interesting about Fifi, but you don't get a lot of him in this movie. But you get enough to know that, like, okay, what is going on with this guy? So he goes to see Fief and everything, and tells him, like, I'm done, you know. And Fifi tries to talk him back into it in a way that is like, no, I'm done. So Fifi, like, tells him, like, look, how about this? Take the wife, take the kid, get away for a couple of weeks. When you come back, if you still feel the same way, no hard feelings. But if you have a change of heart, your job is still here. And who wouldn't want to have a job like that, where you could be like, yeah, I'm going to take some time off. Well, I'm quitting, basically. But hey, if you decide to come back, well, your job is still here for you or whatnot. I don't know too many jobs that would say, hey, you need to take some time off. All right, cool. Or whatnot. Especially not without filling out certain paperwork where you're taking, like, a leave of absence type of thing. But where you can just up and say, all right, deuces, I'm out. And then, oh, well, if you decide to come back, yeah, the job's still here. I don't know too many jobs that would do that. But that's what happens here because Max was the best. So it's like, hey, well, since he is the best, you know, you don't find too many like him around. So we will allow this or whatnot. So we kind of get some, you know, family time with Max and Jess and the baby Sprague. Which, what kind of name is that for a child? I have no idea. Maybe it's an Australian thing. I don't know. Anyone who's listening from Australia or whatnot, is there like similar type names? And this is a serious question. I'm not trying to be funny or anything. Like, it's a serious question because I know different places in the world you have different names. I mean, here where I live or whatnot, in the United States, in Florida, there's some outrageous names that I hear every time. And it's like, what the hell is that? But I mean, to name a child Sprague, like, was that a nickname or was that a real name? But I don't know. But anyway, so Max and the family, they decide to go away for a while to go by the water, you know, kind of go on vacation and everything. And Max seems to be happy and things like that. And him and Jess, you know, just bond and things like, you know, whatnot. And in the process of this, some way, somehow, the Nomad gang has tracked them down, and it's never fully explained, like, how did they find them to begin with? I mean, I know how they find them the second time, but how did they find them initially? Were they tailing them the whole time when Max left and just kind of been waiting for the opportunity to, you know, strike or whatnot, or what? It's never fully explained, like, how did they just randomly show up where they are, type of thing. And the Toe Cutter and company, they decide to go after Jess in particular. They don't go after Max, they go after Jess and the baby. And while they're kind of with this family, you know, renting, I can't remember if they were their parents, because even that's never fully explained. Is they one of their parents or whatnot? But they're with this older couple and their handicapped man child or whatnot. And while Max is out and everything, that's when the Toe Cutter and the gang, they show up and they actually have baby Sprague or whatnot. And Jess, of course, she's just screaming for the baby or whatnot. And the Toe Cutter is basically like insulting her and things like that and just talking to her. And when she says, what do you want from me? And Toe Cutter's like, he gets real serious, like, don't change the subject. Because he's talking about that she has a pretty face. And it'd be a shame if you lost your pretty face. And when she says, what do you want from me? He's like, don't change the subject. And like I said, Toe Cutter's a very interesting character. Or whatnot. Especially with the fact of how he changes his mannerisms and his attitude. In very quick. Whatnot and everything, it make you wonder, is he like a schizophrenic or something or whatnot? I don't know. But anyway, so while they kind of having this standoff, because I failed to mention too that before this, Jess is actually attacked by a few of the gang members while they were at a mechanic shop or whatnot, and when they attack her, one of the gang members gets his hand chopped off. And so that's kind of the reason why they're there at the house and everything. When the Toe Cutter says, you see him there? That's Kundalini. And Kundalini wants his hand back and everything. He's just sitting over there like he's barely alive. He's lost a lot of blood or whatnot. His hand's all wrapped up because he has no hand or whatnot. He just got it all wrapped up. It's like he wants his hand back. So I guess they was trying to get revenge for him losing his hand. Oh, whatever. I don't know what they was going to do with the baby. Were they going to chop the baby's hand off or something? I don't know. But so while they're kind of having this standoff and everything, the old lady, she comes up with this big double barrel rifle and she's threatening them. And the Toe Cutter, he does almost like a Jack Black type of yell and everything. And it's like, I hate guns and everything like that. And, you know, she's like threatening them to back off, and Bubba, he's the only one that's like really serious. He walks up to her like, oh, like, lady, you know, back away, you know, this don't have nothing to do with you and everything. But she stands her ground, and even though she's an old lady, she fires the doggone thing, and that kind of scares them or whatnot. Like, oh crap, this old lady means business and everything, even though she damn near falls when she shoots the gun. But she ends up giving them time to get away by forcing the gang into like the shed or something, and they get in the car and they take off. And then the car breaks down in the middle of the road, and the gang, they end up busting out of the shed or whatnot. They get on their bikes, they take off, you know, four of them and everything. And this is where probably one of the most graphic scenes. Well, it's not really graphic because you don't really see it. You just, I put it like this, your imagination sees more than what you actually see in the movie. It's kind of like a Texas Chainsaw Massacre, the original Texas Chainsaw Massacre thing, where your imagination makes you see things that you don't actually see. And because the old lady, she tells Jess to take the baby and run, and of course she runs down the middle of the road, which has become like a trope in a lot of movies. Why the hell do you run down the middle of the street and everything like that? But she takes off running down the middle of the road. The gang, they're in hot pursuit on their motorcycle. The old lady, she tries to take another stand. She's at the back of the car, and she fires the shotgun at them, completely missing anybody that was in plain shot of her. And they go around the car, and then they run Jess and the baby down, which is, like I said, very sad or whatnot. And Max, you know, he shows up too late. And when he gets there and he sees what's happened to his wife and child, you know, once again, this pushes him even further over the edge and everything. And now, I remember when I was a kid watching this, that it was always said that Jess died along with the baby. But I noticed this time, and I don't know if this was added in or something like that. I can't remember because it's been so long since I seen the original version of the movie. And I know a lot of times with certain movies, they add in certain stuff, especially for TV. And then they, you know, that wasn't in the actual cut. So I can't remember if this was originally part of the movie or this was like a deleted scene that was added in for TV time or something like that. But I know that when they're at the hospital, Jess is actually still alive, even though she's very badly injured and she lost her right arm, and you know, she's very badly disfigured and everything like this. And they say something about the fact that she would survive and everything like that. But Max, he's completely distraught. So after all this happens, Max, you know, he goes back and he rejoins the force, of course, because now he wants to take revenge out on this gang for not only what happened with Goose, but what they've done to his wife and child. But before I get to that part, I do just want to talk about Joanne Samuels here, who I know she gets second billing and everything like that. And we know why the character is there. It is, she's basically like the rock for Max. You know, her and the baby are basically the last ounce of true humanity for him. They're like his saving grace in a way. And once that's taken away from him, the last bit of humanity that he has completely goes away. He becomes basically, you know, Mad Max at this point. But just the little family moments that they have together, I think it's very good. It's character building stuff. But you could tell, like, she's doing her best to keep him, you know, from going over the edge, because I'm pretty sure he's been a cop for a while and he's done a lot of stuff and seen some things that, you know, that you're probably not supposed to see. And she just knows how to keep him, you know, at peace. And once that peace is taken away from him, you know, there's no turning back for him, unfortunately. But one thing I noticed about her in this movie, character-wise, that she rarely wears any freaking clothes in this movie. I think there's like maybe one freaking scene. Well, technically two. But she only had, when we ever see her in this freaking movie, she only has on like a white t-shirt and no shoes and no pants. And even when she's getting chased down by the gang at, you know, before that scene happens, there she is, white t-shirt, no pants. And it's like, does a woman ever put on any freaking clothes? Like, really? And like, who walks around with nothing but a t-shirt, no pants, no, not even shorts, but no pants at all. And no shoes either. Like, who does that? Who literally goes outside with no shoes on? I mean, but anyway, but I thought she did a good job. Like I say, the character kind of gets forgotten over the course of time because you forget about her or anything like that. And Max, he never truly directly references, you know, his previous life or anything like that. But so anyway, going on with Max, he returns, and this is where the movie becomes a revenge story, because Max, he comes back and he finds out, you know, who the gang is and, you know, exactly their names. And then Max becomes the hunter. He starts hunting them, and the toe cutter realizes, like, hey, like something, you know, this, okay, I think we got somebody's, you know, something serious on our hands. And I think the toe cutter, he starts to get kind of, you know, nervous about this, like, but it's just one man, but how can it be? And, you know, things like that. And I'm kind of saying certain things, but just from, there's a scene where after a few of the gang members, including Johnny, get attacked by Max, and Bubba and Toe Cutter get on their bikes to leave. And when the Toe Cutter goes to get on his bike, he takes his helmet and some pictures fall out. And it's a picture. There's two pictures. There's one of Goose, and then there's one of Jess and the baby. And Toe Cutter is like, he has this look on like, how the hell did this happen? How could he have done this without us even noticing? So then you get this whole cat and mouse thing going on between them. And they set a trap for Max too. And Max, he falls for it because he sees a bike that's kind of, you know, left over on the side of the road, and there's a body or whatnot. So Max stops to go check it out, and there's no traffic around, nobody in for miles to be seen. And as he's crossing the highway, Bubba shoots him in the kneecap. So that's how Max ends up getting, you know, kind of that gimp walk that we see later in the series or whatnot, because Bubba shoots him in the knee. And as Max is laying in the middle of the road, that's when they run over his arm. And that's how he ends up getting his arm all messed up too, because of this. And I always found the scene that comes after this very interesting, because of the fact that the toe cutter tells Bubba, like, stop towing around with him, just kill him already. And Bubba's like, oh, I know what I'm doing. And he rides back towards him. And as he's riding back towards him, Max gets his sawed off shotgun, shoots Bubba square in the chest, knocks him off his bike, and that's the end of Bubba, or whatnot. And then Max, he, you know, manages to get himself back up, and then he chases down the toe cutter, and we get one of the craziest scenes where he basically rides the toe cutter head first into a 18 wheeler that's coming his way. Toe cutter gets destroyed or whatnot by this truck, and Max, he continues on, you know, and he's just driving and driving and driving. And he eventually finds Johnny, who is basically taking some boots off of a dead body at a flipped over truck or whatnot. And gasoline is all over the place. And Max, he walks up on him and he tells him to handcuff his ankle to. He drags him over to the truck, handcuffs him to the truck, and he sets a trap for him. And basically telling him, like, he leaves him a little sawed off handsaw or whatnot, and gives Johnny the option. Either he can try to saw off something, or, you know, die or whatnot. And Johnny, like, goes crazy and everything like that, and Max drives away and it blows up. Now, we never officially see Johnny die, but we know he dies, but we never see him actually die and everything. But I know from this scene, a lot of people have always said that James Wan and Lee Whannell from Saw fame, that they kind of drew inspiration from that particular scene, especially with the first Saw, you know, with Dr. Gordon, you know, sawing off his foot and everything. And I mean, it wouldn't surprise me, because similar to how George Miller probably took inspiration from A Clockwork Orange for the gang in Mad Max, I'm pretty sure Lee Whannell and James Wan took inspiration from Mad Max to some degree with that, and probably some other stuff, especially with them being Australian too and seeing that movie. I'm pretty sure that was a lasting effect, and probably was like, hey, that'd probably be interesting, someone, you know, handcuffed to, you know, something by their foot, and they're given an option that to they have to, you know, saw off their foot, you know, if things got truly serious to that point. So it wouldn't surprise me if that happened. So basically that's how the movie ends, and everything, with Max basically, you know, getting his revenge, and then he just rides off or whatnot. Mel Gibson in this movie, like I say, even though he was not a star at this point, because this is 1979, but this movie was like the movie that put him on the map, especially for American audiences, because even when the movie first came out, like previews and everything for it, it didn't show him or anything. It just focused on like the car chases and things like that. That's what drew audiences to the movie. And then when they're introduced to Mel Gibson as, you know, as an actor and everything, they started liking him. And then that's when, you know, the second movie comes along, and you know, other movies like that. And then of course, when by the time Lethal Weapon comes along, he's a full-fledged, you know, movie star at that point. But Mad Max is the movie that, you know, was, you know, his career breakout, you know, thing or whatnot. And he went on to have a really good career for a time. And of course, you know, things went off the rails, which I'm not going to go into that or whatnot, but things went off the rails for him, unfortunately. But no one can deny that Mel Gibson had a run, a really good run in Hollywood. And like I say, Mad Max is the movie that kicks it all off for him. So if I had to rate this movie out of 5, Mad Max, I'd probably give a solid 3 out of 5. Because I mean, it is slow in certain points. People tend to forget that, like how, like that the car chase stuff is far and in between. I'll probably say there's more character driven. And I know anyone, if you haven't seen Mad Max, the original Mad Max, you probably feel like it's slower compared to The Road Warrior or even beyond Thunderdome to some degree. And it's definitely slower than Mad Max Fury Road. That movie is nothing but a 2-hour chase scene, but this one is the beginning. It's the world building, the character study of Max and everything like that. So I give it a solid 3 out of 5. And the car chases alone are worth the watch. But like I say, it comes far and in between, but the buildups to those car chases and everything else, it's just a interesting watch and that goes into this film. So it is something that I do very much recommend. Favorite character? I don't know if I really have a favorite character, because you don't get too much true character development. There are some interesting characters. Like I say, Bubba is a very interesting character from my perspective. Toe Cutter, to some degree, is a very interesting gang leader, and everything. The Knight Rider is even an interesting character, even though you only get him for the opening of the movie. But the Knight Rider is interesting. Goose also is very interesting, but I wouldn't say that I necessarily have a favorite character here. I think this might be a first that I don't actually have a favorite character. I just have more interesting characters that you probably want to see more of, and everything like that. So I want to thank everyone for listening to this episode. I will be back, of course, for episode 145 as I continue my Mad Max month, for the month of January, as I'll be talking 1981's The Road Warrior. But before I get out here, Cuffs, I want to do a couple of shout outs. I have to shout out once again the Blood and Black Run podcast, Jeff versus the World podcast, as well. Also, there's a new podcast that just started here recently. It's called Dweeb Dive, hosted by, and I want to make sure I'm saying this right, but forgive me guys if I butcher this, I believe it's Connor and Arthur, or is it Andy? Oh no, I screwed it up.
God damn it, I fucked this whole thing up. Sam, I did, I fucked this whole thing up. God, can we just go back, please? Can we just cut?
No, really, just
no, really, Sam, please. God,
maybe he already has. Maybe he already has.
God damn it, all right. Woo! Goddamn outlaw, Rick. Come on now. Whoo! I got it. Go back a bit, would you?
Also, there's a new podcast that just started here recently. It's called Dweeb Dive, hosted by Austin and Connor. But I have listened to the first two episodes of their podcast. It's a really good podcast. They cover The Mandalorian in the first two. They kind of broke it down into parts where they talked about the first 4 episodes, and then they did the second 4 episodes in the second episode. But it's a really good podcast. Definitely check them out across, you know, podcasting services. Like I said, a brand new podcast. So definitely anytime there's a new podcast to come along, I like to, especially something if I find myself being interested in, I definitely want to, you know, help promote them and things like that. So definitely give them a listen, especially if you're into the Star Wars stuff with the first two episodes that they've done. So guys, really good job. I did, you know, give credit. I've started listening to the second episode, but I haven't finished it yet. I'll probably finish it, later today once I'm done with this episode that I'm doing, and everything. So, just want to give them a quick shout out as well and everything, you know, and hashtag Potting Family, you know, any podcast that's a part of Potting Family, you know, definitely retweet. It's all about support, you know, with podcasting and things like that. And of course, you can check me out on Twitter at JMovieTalk as well. And of course, on Instagram at JMT Podcast. And of course, all episodes are part of the TV Zone Podcast Network, which of course you can follow that Twitter as well. TV Zone_podcast on Twitter, as well as TV Zone Podcast on Instagram. And of course, you can join the Facebook group page. You just, you know, join the group and get into the movie discussions, TV shows that we're talking, and different movie news that's going on. And of course, other shows that's on the network, for Frodo Podcast, the Three and Out Podcast, the Grand Slam Podcast, which will be coming back baseball season, which is fastly approaching, oddly enough. It'll be spring training in no time, and everything. And also, I do have some newer podcasts that might be coming along in 2020 as well. But I'll talk about that later or whatnot. So, of course, you can find all the episodes available on podbean.com. That's TV Zone Podcast Network.podbean.com. And of course, all other podcasting platforms that you listen to your podcasts on. I want to thank you guys again for listening to this episode. And I'll be back for episode 145. Peace. Cheese! Get a car and tea and easy!